Technologies evolve, and at some point in time, they may become detrimental. Again, the question is for us, what are we going to do about it?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to TechLore Talks. Today, I'm very excited to bring on Jose. Today, we're going to talk about if dumb phones are better for privacy and some of the arguments for that, dumb phones versus minimal smartphones and a bit of the nuance there, adjusting for online work and how to remain focused, mindset shifts, offline activities, and if those are important, as well as just general digital minimalism. Jose is very nuanced, and I really appreciate a lot of his thoughts, and he got me thinking about some things, and I've, even since this interview happened quite a while ago, have changed certain parts of my workflow as inspired by this interview. I hope you enjoy. Hello, everybody. I'd like to introduce Jose to the channel. Do you want to say a few words about yourself?
Yeah, sure thing. Thank you, Henry, for having me here. I'm excited to talk with the TechLore and privacy-minded community. A little bit about dumb phones. So my name is Jose Briones. I am a YouTuber that talks about basic devices, dumb phones, everything in between, all of that. Essentially, the idea is that you should own your devices, not only in the hardware phase, but also in the software ideas. They do not control what you do, but you control them. So that's a little bit of what I do and what I advocate for in the channel.
Yeah. And so what kind of relationship have you seen between, I guess, the dumb phone community, which seems to be normally very focused on the dumb phone aspect of things, and then I guess more of our community, where I think a lot of people are here mostly for the privacy and the digital rights side of it?
Yeah, no, I think there is an overlap in these communities, specifically because there are a lot of needs, or a lot of governments are using technology in order to suppress rights in digital and security areas, but also in for the dumb phone community. So for example, Ticketmaster, not a government, but a company that we probably neither in the dumb phone community nor in the privacy community we like, essentially says, use our services. We don't want you to understand how they work, and you can only use them on a smartphone. So it kind of merges for a lot of us that there are services, governments, and companies who are forcing users to use their platform only for communication. Maybe it is for access to services. I know in Sweden, there is a, or throughout the Nordic countries, there is a need for a specific bank application. You cannot do banking and payments without that bank application. So that is a problem for privacy reasons, and also for dumb phone users that want to use their good old-fashioned physical cards, they cannot use them. So it is a little bit of an intersection for a lot of us, because we're concerned that throughout, as time progresses, there will be more limited choices that may not be free, open source, or private, and also that can only be used in certain devices, which inherently promotes monopolies, which we definitely don't want.
Yeah, you're speaking to a pretty common pattern that I definitely know a lot of our communities have seen. But why do you think that it exists? Because theoretically, you know, services can implement, you know, please get our app, use our service, use our website. But they theoretically could be privacy respecting. So how come we are living in a kind of a scenario where most situations, the more feature rich, the more tech first, the more we move towards, I guess, deeper versions of technology that are more advanced, we tend to see the negative impact on privacy. So I guess to really boil it down, why is having a dumb phone better for privacy? Like, it could theoretically not be that way.
It could not be that way, depending on, of course, your threat model, but also how much data do you want to give to these services, to these governments, to these companies? So for myself, my Lightphone 3 is not great when it comes to messaging communication, but I don't do most of my communication on the Lightphone 3. I do it on a desktop. I do it on a laptop with private clients. So I don't have, or at least the services that I use, the apps that I'm using, they're not mining my data on the background. If I were to have a smartphone as my daily driver, then of course they have more points of data to actually get to me. So segmentation, and I think this is something that you have talked about in the past, is important. And in the dumb phone community, that's what we advocate for. We essentially say you can have a device that is more work-oriented, right? And then you can have a device that is more personal for, you know, phone calls or anything. And if you need something really secure, you segment it to another device. And of course, this sometimes goes against certain people's sensitivities. I don't want to own multiple devices, and that's understandable. But there are also solutions within. So there are other things that you can do in order to be more along the lines of digital minimalism, stop using all of these services that are hoarding your data, or at least restrict access to it with different applications or, depending on your platform, certain restrictions that you can place on the device.
Yeah, so how do you feel about a common criticism I see, it's actually probably the number one criticism I see about dumb phones is, well, why don't you just get a smartphone and make it dumb? You know, why don't you just install a custom ROM that and just don't install Google Play services, but that way you still have more flexibility and you can still install some more apps than maybe like what a Lite phone would provide. So what do you normally respond to that with?
So I think that is a valid argument, and a lot of people are probably going to benefit from using it that way. So for example, I do some testing for certain NFC blockers. This is just one of them. There are different ones that what you do is you tap the phone into, you know, the NFC blocker, and then you block yourself from accessing applications. You tap it again, you gain access once again, right? And these are pretty affordable, like something like $30. You can even create your own on iOS with a, you know, cheap NFC tag. But what I would like to say is essentially when it comes to this is that you are now giving your freedom or your platform choosing, like the way that you're choosing your platform, the way that you're trying to live your life is now dependent on that device. So for me, the change is not necessarily a device change. I used to think this way. My problem with screen time is the applications inside of my phone. I need to get rid of them, and then that will be it. I'll be fine. I need to change my device. I need to go into a Lite phone. That's what I used to believe. But I think it's more of a mindset. So what we need is not necessarily the replacement of devices. It's more the renewal of our mindset that says, I don't want to spend a lot of time on these applications. Therefore, they do not bring a lot of value into my life. And because they do not bring a lot of value into my life, I'm going to eliminate them out of my life. Now, there is also something to be said that there are some people who have been chronically online for whatever reason, let it be because they find their social networks within the online world. Maybe it is because they are dependent upon certain services, or they just like it. They like a lot of information. And that can cause a certain detriment to your physical experience. And I think, at least for the dumb phone argument, when you have a dumb phone, you do have less access to certain distractions. And thus, you can replace them with something different, a completely different lifestyle that may be more offline, going to nature, going to physical encounters, social encounters, going to the bar if you drink, going to the coffee shop if you like coffee, and meeting people in there. So I think there is an argument to be said that while, yes, it is true, you can put a custom launcher, you can replace the ROM for something that is more private, you can delete all of these things, you will inevitably have a certain level of access. And it's up to the individual at that point to say, is this what I want as a part of my lifestyle?
Got it. And regarding the mindset, if someone's listening and they're maybe a little confused about how to ask themselves or how to put themselves in that mindset, how do you normally kind of start that conversation with a person?
That's a great question. I think the first thing that you have to do is an audit. You need to know where you're at in your device usage. So for example, when I first started in this journey, I used to spend about 12 to 13 hours online throughout my day doing different things. Work was one of them, but also a lot of entertainment. And I started to experience a few physical realities, like I was more sedentary, I started gaining a lot of weight, and I just didn't want that in my life. So in order to know the problem, I first, okay, looked at your screen time report and say, okay, what is the problem here? What am I spending my time? What are the activities that I am saying that, hey, this gives me a lot of value? And maybe this is why I'm online. So usually the culprits will be a browser. Another one is Instagram. That one seems to be recurring. And I think another one is YouTube or Netflix. Usually those video entertainment apps, they take a lot of our time. So the question is, do I want to spend the rest of my life doing these things? If the question is yes, continue as if nothing ever happened. If the question is no, then, okay, what can I do? So you start changing the mindset and say, okay, I can uninstall the app. Let's test it out for a week. You test it out for a week. You uninstall the app. You did not install it once again. This is good. It's consistent. Then over time, you know, that habit will remain. But as I have seen, many people, what they do is they just reinstall the app again and they go back to square zero. So then I tell them, okay, then let's look at the alternatives. Can you get an NFC blocker? Can you delete the app or delete the app store so that you don't download it again? Can you give the passcode to a friend? So, you know, still you keep your smartphone. It's still very useful. And you just give the passcode to a significant other, to a friend, to your parent, or whatever it is. And now whenever you get that screen time request, now you don't have the passcode anymore to be able to access it again. So that level doesn't work. Okay, now we can start talking about dumb phones. Let's talk about why a dumb phone, what kind of dumb phone, what kind of access do you want to have, what kind of access do you not want to have. And there are some companies right now, they do have subscriptions, which I personally don't like, but if it's worth it to you, there are some companies that are developing essentially restricted Android devices that have the Play Store, but they only have limited amounts of apps. And this is done via Samsung Knox. So there's a Knox platform that locks it down. And I have seen some people hack it, but it's very few. You know, at that point, we're getting into, yeah, you'd probably need a very basic phone like a Nokia and, you know, never bother with it again.
Yeah, I'd love to talk more about specific devices and kind of get starting points as we move on. But one more question on the mindset, and I think I'm going to tie this to myself. So something I've seen a lot is, and this is a common misconception if we step away from the digital world and more of the physical world and we talk about just broad minimalism, there's a big misconception that minimalism means owning 10 things in your life and that's it. If you own more than 10, you're not a minimalist. And I think a lot of minimalists tie it back to intentionality and just only needing what you need in your life or only owning what you need in your life. And I feel like that's a lot of what you're speaking to. So something on my end, and I think this is especially nowadays post-COVID and now everyone's online, my phone screen time at this point, maybe at most an hour and a half a day. And that's at most. And I think anytime I check it, it's like, oh, because I had to drive somewhere and I needed navigation, and the navigation is what is responsible for it. So it's a lot of things that like I wouldn't give up. So I feel like my phone relationship is very good. But my job is all online. So if I actually add my total screen time, I'm still looking at 8 or 9 hours a day because all the time I'm online, I'm in front of a screen, in front of my computer, and that's not really something I can give up. So my relationship with it personally has been, well, that's about as good as I can do. I mean, the time I'm online is part of my work, and that's something I'm kind of okay with. But is there something more that I'm missing? Am I kind of doing it correctly, you think? How do you normally approach, and I'm sure you spend a lot of time online for work as well. So how do you kind of tie this mindset to people who are working online a lot?
So I think a lot of it has to do with the feeling that you get after being online. So a lot of people get this feeling of, I accomplished something, especially when you're doing work. If I create a video, I'm having this conversation with you, I don't feel any weight in my heart that says, man, that was a waste of my time. I'm like, I was there. So I work with nonprofits in my regular work, and I do a lot of media work. I interact with videos. I interact with podcasts. I create some of these things. And on the side, I do also do the YouTube channel, right? And essentially, what I've learned is whenever I'm doing some of these projects for work or I'm doing projects for the YouTube channel, I'm energized. I don't care that I'm looking at a screen. But whenever I'm just doom scrolling or whenever I open a platform specifically the one that I think is most problematic for me when I'm on a desktop can be Reddit. And I'm sometimes reading these conversations and going back and forth. It's not energizing. It feels draining. So I think that's where the mindset starts as well. You need to start noticing, okay, how do I feel after I use this? Is it something that I said, wow, this was great. I love watching these reels on Instagram. They gave me a lot of value. I learned so many things. Because sometimes that could be the case. Maybe you saw a video that prompted you to start a physical routine or to change your habits, your dietary habits. Or maybe it was just something simple that gave you a cheerful, man, that was a great video. I love watching it. There's no problem. However, I do notice that a lot of people have this feeling of dread or this feeling of, I could have been doing something more. I could have been doing something better. And instead, I wasted my time doing these activities. So when you notice that feeling, then ask yourself, what would you be doing instead? Maybe it is, you know, going to the court to play basketball or soccer. Maybe it is painting. Something that I do recommend to a lot of people is to have a room within their house or maybe even a corner that is all offline so that you can just do offline things, a puzzle, reading, painting. Maybe you like woodworking and you have a lot of space, so you want that corner to be only for offline purposes. That gives you that mindset and it will reinforce the positive feelings at the same time. So I think there are a lot of things, but notice that feeling that you get after you are online. Is it, I accomplished my work. I did what I had to do. Great. If the feeling is, it wasn't that great, then that signals that you may need to change a few things.
Got it. No, a lot of great stuff. And I was taking notes so I don't forget some questions that came up while you were talking. The first one is on the topic of feelings, I think it's great advice. And I think that if a lot of people were to reflect on their feelings after they use certain tools, and I think a lot of what you're describing is actually creation versus consumption. Consuming online content might be more likely to give you those negative feelings, whereas, you know, work, and like you said, you're creating something, tends to have more beneficial feelings. What I've noticed, though, in some of my friends in the past, and even to this day, a lot of people, and I feel like there might be a level of self-awareness, or maybe it doesn't bother them as much, but their feelings might actually betray them slightly. I've known some people in the past who are on TikTok all day, and they'll describe how they feel foggy. They're foggy, or they don't feel like they're productive. They're not doing the things they want to do. They express dissatisfaction with certain areas of their life. And from my perspective, I feel like, I don't know what's causing, I don't know the cause or effect, but I feel like the TikTok side of things can't help. And when I approach them about it, I normally get, well, this actually gives me a lot of happiness. Like I enjoy being on TikTok. Like I feel good. I get a lot of positive videos on this. So there is some negativity, but overall it feels like a net benefit. So how do you normally deal with that in your personal relationships when you feel like there might be a mismatch? You know, feelings are weird because they're genuine, that you can't tell someone their feelings aren't legitimate, but it's a hard thing to balance. I don't know if you've experience.
No, I think that's a very valid point. And I think the interesting thing is to notice what the different methods of dopamine are. So there are, for example, in this case, we're talking about online releases of dopamine, like, you know, a lot of hits, a lot of information, a lot of good feeling in that sense. But then the long-term effect is fogginess, right? So in the moment, you're feeling really happy. You're like, oh, wow, this is amazing. And then over time, that feeling just continues going down and then it becomes dread. Whereas when you think of offline dopamine, so for example, going out on a hike, going out and talking with friends in a social environment, you get a lot of that information, but you don't get the same feeling at the end. Instead, you feel like you did actually something beneficial for your body, beneficial for your mind, beneficial for your, you know, social health, mental health, physical health, whatever it is. So I think in those terms, people do really need to be educated in this area because it can help you determine the long-term outcomes. So there is a concept in finance, right? People sometimes think that finances is something that is hard, is something that it takes time, it takes a lot of discipline. But one of the easiest things to do is just to be consistent with something and to notice the either negative or positive results. And in this case, I'll just give an example. You know, historically, of course, the stock market has done what it has done. And you could say, I'm afraid right now, there's a lot of uncertainty in the world. But if you stay consistent for a long time, you get to see the actual results. You get to see the long-term outcomes. And in our society, we are definitely more of a short-term outcome people. We like to get that feeling right now. We like to have the result right now. So for your friends or people that may be in a similar situation, probably what they're experiencing is that positive feeling in the moment, and they're saying that it actually adds value to their life. But if they really think about it and they consider all of the information, then they start noticing, oh yeah, it is not that helpful when I do it in excess. I mean, there's also a, you know, from the privacy standpoint, I don't think anyone wants to use TikTok, but you know, there could be something to be said. I love following this content creator and they deliver a lot of value to me. So when I watch their videos, I do feel happy. But do you want to watch their videos for 10 hours straight or 7 hours or 3 hours or whatever it is? Or do you want to watch it in a more maybe programmatic way, the way that we used to engage with television, right? We come, the program is there, it's not on demand, it's more that you catch it at 9 p.m. And if not, you're going to have to catch the rerun. So there are different ways of approaching this question. And I definitely think that it is true that sometimes feelings can betray us, but we have to look at the long-term outcomes and what are they actually doing in our lives.
Nice. Yeah, a really good answer. And you mentioned kind of IRL hobbies, using things with your hands, offline rooms. Do you think that there's, I know the people that I have the most respect for who are online all day, they're building services, they are building cool stuff. Almost all of them have some kind of thing they do with their hands when they're not working. It's playing music, it's creating art. One of my friends is doing sewing, or as he calls it, sewing.
Sewing?
Yeah, you might know different geographic regions and how they'll say that. But do you think there's value in that? Do you think everyone should have something that's in real life, and why?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I really think so. It really helps with your creativity, even if it's a rote activity like sewing or maybe doing a puzzle. Like you have an objective, you have an ultimate objective, but you're doing repetitive motions all the time. And not only, of course, there's a lot of research that shows that your memory capacity improves, your memory health improves, but there is also something about doing something physical that allows us to even do better creativity or to make more connections in the digital world. So as we know, as human beings, we create out of what we notice. We create out of our imagination. And when we get exposed to more areas, let it be woodworking, let it be that you go to a metallurgy class, when you get exposed to more physical areas, you start making more connections in your brain that can make you more productive in other areas of life. So when you take the time for coloring, for example, you are coloring a picture and you can just do one color or multiple colors. You can create all of this, whatever your imagination flows. But then your brain is, number one, getting the rest that it needs from constant inputs of information. And then you will be able to make better connections in the future. One of the simplest advice things that you can do in real life is to take a 10-minute break every 3 hours to go on a walk. So if you take a 10-minute break to go on a walk, you will, without devices, of course, like without any pumping information into your brain will start making associations. So if you're really stuck in a problem, or if you're a student and you are, you know, you're writing an essay and you're kind of like having that writer's block, if you go on a walk, your brain will start making different associations. It will start noticing things in nature. And then all of a sudden, the ideas will start flowing. We are limited in our capacity. And I think recognizing that limitation and embracing something in real life can give you even more power, not only to have an ebb and flow throughout your day, but also to even be more creative, more productive, or just have better ideas overall.
Nice, nice. Really well said. Kind of going back a little bit to my relationship with things. So I think my least favorite thing to do on for both Techlore and Cake Wallet is Twitter. I don't like Twitter. It's very much designed to just keep you on the platform all day. It's not even nice to look at. Like visually, it's just in your face. It seems to really promote the most extreme takes, both directions politically, both directions for any issue that's normally just a discussion is somehow a polarized topic on Twitter, and I don't know how it's able to do that. But I have to use these platforms. You know, like I'm posting to them, I'm doing marketing for Cake Wallet, and that's a platform I have to be on. And then for Techlore, it's also a platform we're on. And so what do you normally recommend for people when they actually have to be on these platforms? I know I've developed my relationship with it. I've done a lot of things on my end that work well for me. But generally, where do you start with people when they say, well, look, I actually have a very legitimate professional reason to be on Instagram. So how do I balance my relationship with that as best as possible?
I think the first idea that comes into my head is segmentation. Keep it to one device only, so you don't have that interaction all the time. This may be even helpful from like a work relationship perspective. So I sometimes take trips, and whenever I take trips, I'm going to different locations that I don't know anything about, and I may need directions. I may need a more reliable phone with different applications, or I'm going to encounter, you know, a restaurant that only has QR codes, or maybe it is something that it has an app that I have to use. So when that happens, I swap my SIM card and I have a travel phone because I recognize that it's most useful. So this is the Jelly Star, is a very tiny, you know, device, which I like to use for travel only purposes and for work. So segmentation allows you to separate completely and say, okay, I need Instagram. Okay. If I need Instagram, do I need the mobile version? Okay, if I need the mobile version, that's fine. I will put it on this device or even on an emulator, right? So I'm just going to use it on this technology. It allows me to do my work and then I can move on. So segmentation is one thing. Then the other thing that can really be helpful is just to have office hours. So, okay, you need to use Instagram. Perfect. That's not a problem. How many hours do you actually need to use it for your business? Is it 3 hours a day? Is it 2 hours? Is it 5 hours a day? Then create some office hours for those timeframes. So you say, okay, we're going to be on Instagram from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. to get customer queries and to do some engagement, to post the reels. And that will create a better relationship than if you just have it pinging at you all the time. So creating that separation, creating a schedule for these things can be extremely helpful. And then the final question that I know it's uncomfortable, but the question is, can I do without this platform? Maybe you can. It's not impossible. I mean, especially if you have a large following and you have something that people are actually looking for, maybe it is. There is another one, especially for business owners or small businesses. Can you delegate it? Do you have to be the one actually doing these tasks, or can you delegate it to somebody else, pay somebody and say, okay, I'm going to pay you to do these tasks on Instagram, and then I don't have to spend my valuable time that I'm building this product, building this service, building this connection with the audience. I don't have to worry about the metrics and the SEO and all of these things. So just delegate it to somebody else. So those are some strategies that you can use. And for me, I'm trying to reduce the amount of services that I sign up for. Like at least in the past 2-3 years is Blue Sky and Threads. I'm like, okay, I don't have time for yet another sign up. I'm just going to keep what I have. And whenever I'm ready, I will go away, knowing that I'm okay missing out on the benefits and rewards that these platforms may be able to give me. And I think that gives you more power because you say like, yeah, I'm okay. Like, I don't need the extra $30 or $20 a day or whatever it is that you make because it's not that important.
Nice. One question I've always thought about, and I feel like it's actually maybe a polarizing discussion and it comes down to personal preference. The concept of digital minimalism, from a hardware perspective, is very fascinating to me. So my historical relationship with it is as few devices as possible. I don't like having to manage 5 different phones, keeping them all up to date, managing my software, keeping my files synchronized. It's a pain in the ass. And same with computers. I used to have like a laptop with 3 operating systems on it. I had a desktop, and then I had a personal laptop. And so I realized very quickly that managing these things was really obnoxious, but it was really nice to have dedicated devices and operating systems for each specific part of my life, and the segmentation was very important from that. And since then, I've talked to a lot of people who actually have the opposite relationship. They say, actually, to me, digital minimalism means it's not about the hardware. It's about using devices that get the job done. So they're like, well, I have a whole Mac Mini just for editing videos. Oh, I have a whole MacBook Pro just for these specific work tasks I need to do on the go. I have a whole third laptop just for my personal life, so that way I don't have to do it on these other devices. So where I'm going with this is, how do you see this relationship with hardware and digital minimalism, and how do you help people kind of work through that?
I think what matters is the mindset again. You do have to have the mindset of what is actually important to you. And you also have to be realistic about your budget, right? Is this something that you want to spend a lot of money on? Because I personally use the Lite Phone as my main device. And the reason why I have kept it for so long, I had the Lite Phone 2 before that, is because I didn't really need music. I don't listen to a lot of music. But had I listened to a lot of music, the experience on the Lite Phone 2 was very subpar. Like, you could only have like 1 gig of music, which is about 200 songs. And if you're really into music, that's not going to happen, right? So I think finding the right tool that supports your lifestyle is something extremely important. But I think it's the mindset that, okay, which one do I prefer? I need to know myself. I need to know that segmentation is better for me, or intentionality is better for me. I can be intentional with my laptop. I can be intentional with my phone. I can be intentional with all of these things. And I don't need to create all of these different devices and multiple setups and all of this kind of stuff. Maybe I keep it simple, keep it to 2, a work phone and a personal phone. And then 1 laptop to rule them all, with Linux, of course. So getting that mindset, understanding that purpose is, I think, the first step. And I think the second one is just realizing that consumerism is not going to solve your problem. That goes back a little bit to the mindset. But a lot of people think that, oh, if I just get this device, if I just buy this one extra added accessory or software, that is going to do it for me. No, those things are going to support you in your decisions. And if it's more clunky to use than it is helpful, then it's going to be detrimental to your decision and also to your budget. So I think centering yourself with the reality that there is no one solution for everybody, I need to find the solution that works for me, that works the best for me, is the first step. Look at your budget and say like, okay, am I doing this out of impulse? Am I doing this just because it looks cool, or does it actually have a purpose? And then, you know, you can move forwards to there to say like, okay, I'll have 1 device, or I'll have 2 devices, or I'll dual boot, or, you know, whatever it is that you want to do. Or like myself, I just like to keep it simple. I have a desktop. It works. It does what it needs to do. And when I'm on the go, I have the Lite Phone. When I'm on a work trip, I have a laptop for my work trip. And that's it.
Yep, really straightforward. It's interesting too. I mean, over the years, I mean, you used to have an iPhone for mostly phone. Back then, there was also an iPod Touch, which was like an iPhone, but with missing features. But a lot of people had both of them. And we used to have the iPod Nanos and the iPod Classics. So if you actually were serious about music, you used to have that. And then you'd have a desktop, you'd have a laptop. So we've kind of gone from having so many dedicated devices to combining everything into just a few devices. And I mean, same thing with like, back then people had multiple watches. like one watch to go out for a fancy dinner, one watch for fitness, one watch for just casual usage. And now for most people, it's just an Apple Watch, and it kind of serves the purpose of all three. So we've really been able to consolidate things. And I think that comes with some drawbacks. But like, I think your way to kind of help people see through that is a really solid starting point. I have a couple more broad meta, more deep questions. But before we get to those, I have, you know, I kind of want to talk about devices since we're on that note. Where do you normally start people off? I know you talk about dumb phones. You have a great website. I've used it a lot. Even before I started speaking with you, it's something that was really cool. So if you want to talk about your website, please do, because it's super helpful. But what devices do you normally like start people off? You know, what are your favorite devices? What do you normally recommend to most people?
Yeah, so I think what you need to recognize is that in the devices world, there are a lot of options. That's the first thing. So that's why I created the Dumb Phone Finder. I tried to create a curated list and as much up-to-date information as possible, as it allows me to collect the information and update it. So essentially what I do is you can filter there with your needs. And I think that that's helpful because everyone has different needs. Now, I want to say that the first thing that I say to people is start with what you have. Start with what you have, understand what you have and why it's not working. Now, if you have come to the decision that you just want a button phone, like you just want buttons, you love buttons, or you want a light phone because it's cool and it's just something that you want, and it actually supports your lifestyle. Like you're not going to be compromising on a lot of things. It's not going to be too much friction. Then there are a few devices that I, or maybe it is that you want it completely locked down. You don't want the access to all of these apps, but you still want access to calls, text, and, you know, maybe navigation or something like that. So I say, okay, start with what you have. Look into the NFC blockers, Brick, Bloom, Focus on iOS, Unplug. Those are some of the NFC-based blockers. This one's called 4REM. It has more like a feature for sleep. Like that's their whole thing. Like their branding is more towards sleep. So use the NFC blockers. Maybe they work for you. And if not, okay, let's talk about dumb phones. Let's talk about a few options. I tell people, get a dumb phone that supports your lifestyle, but that also will get updates. Because there is something to be said, sadly, about the dumb phone reality that we live in, that companies just put them out there and they never update them. So if there is an issue with the phone specific devices, they will never fix it. And this has happened with a few phones here and there. And essentially people give up and they go back because the company wasn't really behind the phone. They were not really giving updates to it. There is another layer that could be helpful is how much friction do you want? Maybe you want a smartphone that has an e-ink screen. So if you want a smartphone that has an e-ink screen, that allows you to have all the apps that you need, but it is because of the e-ink, you have a lot of friction and you're not going to be using it as much. So that can be extremely helpful as well. So those are some options. Those are some ideas. So start with what you have and then look at, okay, how much friction do I want to add into my life? What can my lifestyle actually support? Maybe you really need all of these apps. That's fine. No problem. Okay. Get an e-ink device, BigMe or Mudita. This one is the Mudita. You can sideload. This one's de-Googled actually. So I do like that about them. Or maybe it is, okay, I just want something simple with a lot of updates. You get the light phone. You keep moving forward. How much friction do I want to add? What makes sense for my current use case? Maybe it is the NFC blocker. That's good enough. Perfect. So those are kind of like where I start people off. Use what you have, put some blockers. If that doesn't work, start adding friction all the way down to what is it that you, how much friction can you actually introduce into your lifestyle without breaking it down?
Yeah. And then something I mean, on that note, I always have to warn people because I do get a lot of questions from our community of, oh, I'm just going to get a dumb phone and not deal with any of these problems in the context of privacy and security. But something a lot of people forget about, and you alluded to it earlier, is basic encrypted communication is pretty rare on these devices. And I do like how you include a filter. You have a filter on your website, I think, for WhatsApp, for Signal. I don't know if you have others, but I know you have at least those two. Do you have others?
I do have WhatsApp and Signal, but the reality is that if it can install Signal, it probably can install Threema, Session, you know, all of these other ones, because essentially what I made with that filter is people who are into Threema or Session or even more hardcore, like, you know, going XMPP or like, you know, some of these other platforms, Matrix, those are usually de-Googled. Mm-hmm. And my litmus test for that one is if it can install Signal, it can install pretty much all of these other ones sideloaded because they're de-Googled.
Very cool. Yeah, but a lot of these phones lack that ability. And so you even mentioned it about the Lite phone. That Lite phone doesn't really support any end-to-end encrypted messaging, which could be a serious limitation. I know it's been a huge thing for myself, and it's why the Punkt was always an attractive one for me. And I know you saw that review. And I know they've released a new client for their Pigeon, which allows desktop syncing. So now, even if, you know, the phone Pigeon breaks, which I know it was broken for a long time, their subreddit was really pissed off about that. At least now you can still use it on your desktop. How do you normally communicate about this issue to people? Is it something you make obvious? Is it something that you don't think many people should be concerned about? Yeah.
No, I talk about it very openly, and I say to people, you know, you need to understand if this is the kind of communication that you want to have. You need to be aware of the risks. So I think a lot of people use SMS here in the United States, of course, still, and hopefully we will eventually get RCS or more encrypted communications. I know RCS is not really encrypted, but, you know, we can have that longer discussion about that. But I think there are some solutions that are middle ground. So they have, you know, an extra application here or there, or you can sideload the application. For example, this one is a little deprecated when it comes to Android updates, but you can technically install Signal. The Cat S22 is a flip phone. It's like a really chunky flip phone, and it's running Android Go. So it has all of the Android Go facilities, and you can just install whatever application you want. So something like that can be extremely helpful. It just depends. And this is where I personally say, okay, if you really want a dumb phone that doesn't have all of these other things, like completely nothing, not even related to SMS, not related to applications, don't have any ability, just know, but you value privacy, just know that you're going to be a little bit slower in your communication. And this brings a very important point that sometimes you need to have the courage to be yourself, even if your family or friends or whoever it is that is telling you you need to use this service. And you're saying to yourself, okay, I will use this service, but I'm going to use it on my own terms. I will reply to you when I get home. So if you really need to contact me, give me a regular phone call. It's not the most secure way. Yes, it's not the most secure way, but it is the way that you can contact me because I have decided that this is the lifestyle that I want to have, and you need to stand up for what you believe. So, I mean, for me, for my example, I use the Lite phone on the go. People can reach me if they want to reach me. If they have sensitive information, I have over time told them you need to send it to me via this platform and whatever platform that is for you, you know, like choose that platform, and people get used to it over time. People call me more when they need to actually get a hold of me. Or sometimes they call me and say like, hey, I really need you to go check Signal. And then I'm like, okay, hey, I'll go and, you know, sign in and, you know, do whatever I have to do and I'll go check it out. Or I'm going to tell them like, hey, I really can't check it right now. Give me 15 minutes. You know, I'll be able to get to a terminal and sign in and do all of the things I need to do. And then, you know, that's it.
Really cool. No, that's really good advice. So the last few questions that I have are more kind of like zooming out, kind of our relationship with ourselves, with people, with others. And the first one, I think, yes, it's going to be the last one, but you already kind of started speaking to it. So how do you feel about when our choices to use these inconvenient services start impacting people around us? And this is something an anecdote. So one of my old friends had a friend, I don't know the other friend, but they were starting to go out with this friend, and the friend actually had a Lite phone. And they were complaining about it. They were like, man, they couldn't get navigation. We got lost. They refused to just ask for help. They refused to just use a different device. So how do you balance that in your life? Because I'm sure that our choices impact other people negatively, but you don't want to overdo it either, because then people will just not even want to talk to you.
Yeah. I think you need to recognize what is the level of inconvenience that you want to introduce into your life and also into your loved ones that are around you. I personally think that it's probably best when you don't interfere with anyone else, like not in the convenience sense, but it's just like, okay, you're making these decisions about your life. I'm making these decisions about my life. There is a clear separation. There is a German philosopher called Alfred Adler that talks about this, and he talks about it and he says there needs to be a separation of tasks. So my task is to live my life according to the best way I can. Your task is to do the same. And from time to time, they're going to merge, right? Like our paths are going to merge. And the question there is, okay, what is my responsibility in this situation? What is your responsibility in this situation? Because, for example, if you're with somebody that has a dumb phone and you have a smartphone, well, I guess the question is it my responsibility to look up the maps, to look up the information because I have the more powerful device? So being clear about what those tasks are, I think it's going to reduce a lot of friction in the communication. And when it comes to platforms for communication, you can just be honest and say, hey, you can still reach out to me on WhatsApp. You can still reach out to me on Signal or on whatever platform it is, Threema. But it's only going to happen during this time period. And that is what I'm comfortable with. That is what I know benefits me the most. And if you don't want to be my friend because of that, then the question that you have to truly engage with is, what is more valuable to me? Is it this friendship or is it my lifestyle? And if they cannot accommodate to my lifestyle, then, you know, you have a breakdown there. Am I doing it because I'm people pleasing? I'm just using these platforms because I want to please people? That's not a good thing either. So you have to keep those things in balance and say, okay, I'm going to stick to my guns. I'm going to stick to my lifestyle as much as possible. And whenever we go on a trip to an unknown location, I'll concede. I'll use a smartphone. It's just a better way to live. You know, most people usually keep a smartphone in their drawer or a tablet or something like that. So that will be the most useful. And I think understanding, okay, am I willing to lose this person? Is this relationship really that valuable? And I know that sounds a little selfish, but it's something that if we were to put a different issue, like let it not be devices, let it be, you know, my right to choose certain things, or even if you put political parties, right? I mean, all of a sudden you're like, is that friendship really, really helping me and achieving the things? Because I want to live in this lifestyle. I want to live in this way. And you have to be okay with losing something. Not everybody is going to be happy about your choices. So you have to determine what is the amount of loss that you're willing to endure and what is truly, truly necessary, which relationships are actually helping you. And of course, it is a meta question. It's very difficult and it's something that is personal, but you have to decide it for yourself.
Well said. Do you think technology is bad?
And no.
Do you think that we're anti-tech?
No. I don't think technology is bad. I think the way we use technology is neutral in my view. And the way that we use it is what determines the outcomes. Now, we can make an argument that certain technologies have been created with specific purposes. And the question is whether that specific technology is bad. So, for example, cameras are great. I think they're amazing. But surveillance cameras are not great and I think should be abolished from the face of the earth because they invade on our privacy. So it is the same technology, but it has completely different purposes. Now, of course, if you put this camera that I'm looking at right now on a street, I don't know how much high definition you're going to be able to get at a long distance. But if you put one of those surveillance cameras, then, you know, that is a completely different thing. So I do think some technologies have been invented with evil purposes, with nefarious purposes. I think, for example, the smartphone was created with the purpose of making everything really nice, convenient. But once we started allowing everything on the App Store, I think that's when things started to break down a little. And then instead of making phones that were small, we started creating phones that were really big to drive users to certain applications. So as you see, these technologies also evolve. So they may have started at a very good place, but over time, with people's preferences and companies' preferences, they are now exploiting some things as the technology evolves, and they become detrimental to us. So the question is, yes, technology is useful, but then when is that switch happened, and what are we going to do about it? Where are we going to do corrective technologies? I'm trying to think of an example, but it doesn't come to mind. But I mean, when it comes to digital rights or just the ability to own things, right? We used to have CDs, we used to have cassettes, physical copies of music. And then over time, publishers have taken away that ability. And now you have to have a subscription for certain things, unless you buy it directly from the artist. But I can definitely see how that technology has evolved. But some people are saying, you know what? I'm going to go back to the physical device, to the physical record, to listen to my music. Not only because it may have a different experience of how it sounds to me, but also because I want to own it instead of subscribing to these things. So technologies evolve, and at some point in time, they may become detrimental. Again, the question is for us, what are we going to do about it?
Yeah, I have one more kind of final question to kind of hopefully stump both of us. But before then, I'm really frustrated right now in the phone space, speaking to the large phone situation. Because I have such, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I feel like these are such basic, easy requirements that I want out of a phone. I want a phone that is truly pocketable, around the size of like a 12 or 13 mini for an iPhone. I want it to run just very bare bones Android, could be stock Android from Google, could even be, you know, a reskinned Android from a third party manufacturer, but not too bloated. Ideally, it supports custom operating systems, but not even that's fully required. You know, I'm willing to compromise on that potentially. And I want it to have more than 3 years of security updates, so I'm not just wasting money. But those aren't crazy requirements, and I feel like I can't get that anywhere, and it puts me in a really frustrating position. So have you seen any devices that are coming anytime soon that do that?
Yeah, so I think the last requirement was the one that threw it out of the way, the long-term support, right? That's just hard to come by. Yeah, unfortunately. You can hack a Mudita or a Lite phone and make it your own Android system, you know, kind of like create your own Android because they're de-Googled. Like, you know, you can create your own Android stack and, you know, customize it that way. But the problem is, yeah, long-term updates are just not going to be there. Sadly, I think the death of the small phone with security updates was what? Pixel 5a, probably? Pixel 4.
iPhone 13 mini, yeah.
Yeah, iPhone 13 mini.
The Pixel 4a, actually. I don't even know if the 5a is that small to me. But the 4a was pretty...
The 4a, yeah. I was thinking in that region of time when the 13, the 12 mini, the 13 mini came out, and the Pixel 4a. And then they just said, no, it's just going to be less specs, but it's going to have this ginormous screen. And I think the founder of Pebble, he's trying to do a small phone Android thing project, but he needs a certain, because, you know, these are economies of scale and all of that kind of stuff. And I think he's trying for enough people to sign up to his project to be like, okay, this is probably viable. We're going to make it. But there are, sadly, the only problem with the other ones, like, so there are mini smartphones as well, like the Jelly, but you really need to, like, you can put Lineage OS on this, for example, but then you have to do it yourself, and it's not coming by default, and that only comes with, do you have the knowledge to not brick your device or to recover it in case that you brick it? It's not available to everybody, but there are some options. It just depends on how much tinkering you want to do.
Got it. And the last question is about consumption. We talked about how being online, consuming content can make a lot of people feel negative, yet we produce content. So how do you grapple with your relationship with putting out content, which inherently you have to play into the algorithms to some extent that we both probably don't appreciate? So how do you navigate that as a content creator?
So I think the first thing that I decided very early into my content creation journey was that this was going to be a hobby for me. It was not going to be a business. And I know not everybody has that luxury. I do, and I decided to do that. And the reason why is because the day I want to stop publishing content, the day that it is not interesting to me anymore, the day that I feel like it's not doing any good, or the day that the algorithm bashes me completely, then I can just move on and go back to kind of like regular life without having to produce all of this content. Because I'm willing to miss out. There's nothing that is, this is not paying my rent. It's providing some side hustle income to a degree, but I'm not dependent on it. So that was the first thing that I kind of put my relationship with content creation in that framework. It's going to be a side thing, it's going to be a hobby. I'm going to do it when I have time. If I don't have time, I go weeks without posting because I'm busy at doing other things. Or for example, later this year, I'm going to be traveling to Europe and I just won't have time to post. I won't be in my regular environment. I won't post, and that's okay. I'll be gone for like 3.5 weeks and the world will go without me. And that is not a problem for me because I set up my relationship with content creation in that way. That's the first thing. And I think the second thing is to do it in a way that you're actually adding value to people. I could create a video a day. I could create a vlog and, kind of like showcase what my life is or do all these things, but I don't. I make videos that are under 10 minutes that explain some of the functions of the devices. I try to keep it short and succinct. Essentially, I create the videos that I wish were available when I started my journey. And my goal with my channel, this is kind of funny to me, but my goal with my channel is that you find the device that you truly want that is going to support your lifestyle, and you don't come back to my channel until you're ready to replace it. So it's essentially saying, hey, you found a dumb phone that is going to benefit you and that's going to keep you offline the most. If you don't watch any of my other videos, that's fine with me because I did my service, which was helping you find the device that you needed at that point in time. And if your needs ever change, I'll be there giving you advice, giving you understanding, answering questions so that you can go live your life out there like I've been able to live my life out here.
Nice. Really cool. Well, Jose, how can people find you and reach you if they want to learn more?
Yeah, absolutely. So there is the YouTube channel, of course, and there is an email address there. I am hoping one day to finally change that email address from a Gmail address. So sadly, right now it's Gmail, but eventually we'll get to that. I'll probably ask you afterwards, like some of the pros and cons of having, these different email addresses or contacts with YouTube. But you can send me an email. There is also a forum that we host. There is the dumbphones.org, forum.dumbphones.org, and it's based on Discourse. So similar to the TechLore platform, I think. And you can come and ask questions and have a discussion. You can also reach out to me on Reddit, even though I spend less and less of my time there nowadays, just because it has grown to be a massive community of people interested in this topic. And as things grow and Reddit is a large degree social media, it's very algorithmically curated. And because of that, I hope to not spend tons of my time in there answering questions, but hopefully the forum grows and we're going to be able to answer it there. So forum, email, or just drop a comment in the YouTube channel and I'll try to do my best to answer it.
Super cool. And we'll leave links to all that down in the description. So make sure you go check out his channel. Thank you, Jose. And it's been a pleasure to talk to you. And I'm sure that a lot of this has been really helpful to our community because I know most people in our community have all thought about these things, even if it's only from a privacy background. So thank you very much.
Thanks.
And with that all said, I want to thank Jose for coming on TechLore Talks. He actually also interviewed me, so if you want to check out his interview of me and some of the things that I share about privacy and digital minimalism on his show, go ahead and check that out down in the description. And I want to thank you all for watching and learning a little bit more about your tech and your digital rights, in ideally in a very new light today. You know, this is not something that we normally talk about on the channel, but I think it's very applicable and will resonate with a lot of our audience. If you like TechLore Talks and you like these interviews, definitely support TechLore down below. You can become a TechLorean on Patreon, on our forum. You can contribute Monero for just one-off tips, and you can also do one-off tips directly on our forum as well, which don't have any perks, but it prevents an extra subscription if you want to avoid subscriptions. Thank you all for watching. Don't forget to support if you enjoyed this, and I'll see you next time on TechLore.